You're listening to a 3CR podcast of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia.
City Limits. Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9 a.m.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, and I've ridden over the acres and acres of tar and cement to get here this morning from Brunswick, and here we are. And Timony's over there, I'm Kevin Healy over here. And Timony's given me this one of these wonderful frozen coffee type drinks. What are they called again, Timony?
Oh, good morning, everyone. I have procured a coconut matcha for Kevin today.
Well, I can taste the coconut too. Coconut matcha, yes. And I'm going to pour a tea in a minute, so I'm going to have hot and cold. It's going to be quite wonderful. By the way, the tea today is an interesting one. It's called Tai Kuan Yin.
What does that translate to?
Well, I don't know. It's you're going to find it hard to believe, but that's actually Chinese, and I'm sure the pronunciation was shithouse. But Tai Kuan Yin, and it's a lovely tea, and so you'll find out in a minute. Do you want to pour a cup for you?
I'll have the black one, please.
Yeah, the black. Well, it's it is sort of. You mean the black cup? I know what you mean. There we are. And you've just been rescuing a dog or something, haven't you? Tell us about that. This has nothing to do
really?
With City Limits, really, but go on, yeah.
Okay. I'm sure I have more interesting things to talk about today. I was in the cafe waiting for this matcha to be brewed, and there was a little doggy sitting next to me, and he needed to go to the vet today. He had a little accident. And the lady was having a bit of strife because she said she was very busy today and she didn't have any time to take the dog to the vet, and she was calling around the vet seeing if there was any that had appointments today. And I thought I would just offer, like an insane person, whether she wanted a stranger to take her dog to the vet. But Karina, very responsible and knowledgeable person, talked me out of it in the end.
Oh, did she? So, you didn't do it. Okay, right. Yeah. Well,
I maintain my semblance of sanity.
That's our doggy story for the day. Speaking of animals, though, interesting headline. Oh, well, we'll tell you what's on today, of course. We're going to be talking in the second half of the program. We're going to have an interview with the secretary these days of the shop of the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union. His name's Lucas Kakagiannis, because in the last couple of weeks, of course, Ben Carroll has taken over as state premier here in Victoria. And Ben Carroll comes out of the Shop Assistants Association. That's his alma mater industrially. And they, of course, have played a pretty a role as a right-wing, very right-wing union. They were part of the group, of course, the groupers years ago, as they were called, who kept Labor out of office for many years in the Menzies era. And now they're running the show here in Victoria, and a lot of their aficionados, like Stephen Conroy, the former senator, who's extremely right-wing and involved with lobbying all sorts of groups these days. I think he's head of the gambling lobby for one. He was at one stage anyway. They're rubbing their hands in glee at what's happening. So I thought we'd have a yarn to Lucas and maybe talk about some other broader industrial issues going on at the moment as well. So
that sounds fun.
Yeah, that's the show today. And but first, back to what I was saying about animals. Interesting headline, I thought, in the Financial Review last week. You'll find interesting, because it is a very serious subject. Major bird flu outbreak risks. Now, the next two words, major bird flu outbreak risk. Now, I presume we assume danger for wildlife, danger for birds, wildlife.
Mass mortality,
yeah. What do you reckon it actually said in the Financial Review?
Extinction warning, biodiversity loss, or maybe Australian tragedy, or perhaps bird unhappiness, or maybe Tweety Sadness?
Not even mildly close.
Oh, okay. Is it like, like Chocolate Ribbons or maybe Reef Externality?
No.
Trombone Flamingos?
No. Risk Inflation Spike.
Ah.
See, it's the economy, stupid. Don't you realise that?
How much does a bird cost?
Yeah, I mean, stuff the wildlife. It's the economy. Mm. So there you are. That's their take on that one. Now, here's some genuine sad news, though.
Oh, great.
Yeah, genuine sad news. As you know, and we mentioned some time ago, it's coming out, but it's now out. The book called Riding the Jet Stream, Alan Joyce's autobiography.
That's right.
It's hit the airwaves, hit everything. And some time ago when it was first announced coming out, they said it would show he was a man of steel or something. And we made the point then to be careful because steel was spelled STELL. We wanted to make that clear. Well, what do you know?
What do I know?
It's hardly hit the shelves, and they're already having to discount it to try and sell it.
Okay. How much can I pick up a copy for?
Well, it's been
as a bird.
It's been reduced in some places from 40 to 50 to 30, I think it is, or whatever. $39.99, a $10 discount. So it's gone, well, it's 40 really, isn't it? 50 to 40. And one bookseller who spoke on conditional anonymity said people aren't beating down the door to get a copy. It's very sad because the reviews say that it's just incredibly self-serving, hard it is to believe. And it turns out that anything that was wrong, he didn't really have much to do with, or at least it was justified by various reasons. But
was merely the man at the top.
Poor old, that's right, and getting all those millions and millions and millions. So there you are. Now, also, though, and this is genuinely serious, I think the government is talking about making changes to the Immigration Act and immigration rules at the moment. Yeah. I think everyone is arguing that, or anyone who's looking at it at all would argue that all they're doing is reacting to One Nation and the Liberal Party's quite dreadful immigration policies, which aren't that much worse than the government's quite dreadful immigration policies anyway.
Yeah, my parents are permanent residents. I've said goodbye already and sent them on their way.
That's right. We go back to, of course, Kevin Rudd saying that no one who comes by boat will ever get here, and that didn't help at all.
Actually, my dad did come by a boat in 1984.
Wow.
So that's him off.
I think some more kick of coconut here. And I always say that I bet the Indigenous people wish they'd turned the boat people around in 1788.
Exactly.
Anyway, the illegal boat people of 1788 weren't turned around, and that's the start of the problem for them.
Oh, there's still time.
Maybe, yeah. But anyway, the government is talking about, but it's backed off because there's obviously problems inside the caucus about how far they go in appeasing the right-wing people. But interesting to know that Nigel Farage is now adopting the Australian Stop the Boats plan. He says he will launch the largest military operation in the English Channel since World War II, if he becomes PM, of course. And it was called Operation Fortress. They've all got these wonderful names. Operation Fortress. Mm-hmm. And he says that with what the Australian president proved is that the certainty of interception and the guarantee of return is the most successful deterrent possible. And, of course, if people are fleeing persecution and possible death and all that sort of thing, they need to be deterred, don't they? I mean,
yeah, what they need is something even worse.
That's right. So it's good to know that Nigel's adopting our plan and we're thinking of making our plan a little worse and a little more difficult.
Yeah, making the world
people.
A more and more terrible place, so no one ever wants to leave the terrible places they already are.
And of course, in terms of vote winning, it won't matter anyway, because the others have got that side of the show tied up anyway. And so, what's it matter? You may as well. But they won't. They won't. In fact, someone yesterday made a very clear point, and I think it's true, that they keep talking about Labor being a centre-left party, and Albanese talks about them being a centre-left party.
People
point out, they're in fact a centre-right party, and the others are just further to the right. And I think that's pretty accurate.
I've been thinking lately about leftism and rightism, and honestly, my thoughts aren't very coherent on the topic. But I feel like these binary distinctions are not really helping us much these days, because it feels like there's. I'll just stop talking, actually.
Right. You leave it as it not helping us these days. Well, that didn't help us. But anyway, okay.
I never promised you coherence before 10 a.m.
No, okay. Well, keep soaking on the coconut and the tea and see what happens. Now, interesting though, you're just a touch older for this, but there's a survey taken. And this was revealed at the Royal Commission, but nonetheless, the information itself is independent in a sense. A survey at Uni of Melbourne showed that the most overrepresented in law enforcement, but also in misogyny and extremism, were Gen Z young men aged and up to about 24.
And people were worrying about young men being underachievers.
That's right. But there they are. And but also they one of the reasons they claim for some violence against women, etc., because they say they're two extremes. They're extreme left or extreme right. Although extreme left is saying capitalism is ruining the world and should be resisted with violence. I'm not sure that's such an extreme left position at all. But anyway, that's the argument. But I've realised that, in fact, they shouldn't just make those claims to the misogynism, etc., because older men can do it too. It's great to know. He should not get any airtime at all, but Sam Newman, who's a footballer, who absolute right-wing and misogynist, and he, in fact, came out over that rape case last week, where a bloke called Ralph Carr was convicted of rape, and he said that the woman had buyer's remorse and after the event, and came out supporting him.
Gross.
And he was then in turn attacked, which is hard to believe, by Wayne Carey, who said that. Wayne Carey came out and said, "Well, no, maybe you need a he was found guilty," and Wayne Carey himself, of course, has a long history of misogynism, of being convicted of sexual harassment, of domestic violence, etc. So these two older men now, ex footballers. Are paving the way for that generation to show that they too can do it. They can be as misogynist and right-wing as you like.
Well, they are all about tradition.
So that was just, I thought, an interesting aspect. Now, we've mentioned a number of times, particularly when we're talking to over the journey to Dave Sweeney from the Australian Conservation Foundation, about the fact that the big resource companies just go out and mine, cause a hell of a mess, and then walk away. They have to put a deposit down, but usually the deposit doesn't go anywhere near the cost of rehabilitating the mining site, particularly when they're supposed to rehabilitate it back to where it was when they started.
Yeah, a lot of deposits from mines are toxic.
Yeah, that's right. And the Ranger one up in Northern Territory, of course, the uranium mine, they are still working on that one, but there's plenty they walk away from. And there's a there's a particular one out in out north of Australia, stuck out in the ocean, Northern Endeavour, which was owned by our old mate Woodside at one stage. But then when it reached a certain point, Woodside flogged it off to a small company which has no hope of reaching, or they claim that has no hope of raising the money, the massive amount of money, decommissioning it. And the bill could be left with the federal government. But the federal government's now saying, well, no, it's not going to cop the bill. Let's hope it goes ahead with this. But it says it will it will actually introduce a levy on these all these companies to cover these situations where they're left with the bill when the company, you know, whatever's there, leaves it alone and reckons it can't afford to fix it. So we'll see what happens. But hopefully they're going to start taking some action to make sure all these things are cleaned up at the expense of the industry and not left in the hands of the public purse, or just left to be ongoing massive pollution, of course.
Yeah. Is this levy actually going to be used to clear up the sites, or is it just going to be like an extra stream of revenue for the government and becomes a sort of like default little miniature mining tax?
Well, we'll wait and see.
Just
but,
a little, another cost of doing business.
Let's hope it happens. But it's interesting that Woodside at a given point flogged it off and then left it with some small company that couldn't do much about it.
Some subcontractor of a subcontractor.
Not that Woodside would have been deliberately putting, you know, causing any problems.
Oh, absolutely. This was definitely not their plan from the start.
They're a responsible company, and after all, they,
they're on the side of wood. It's their name.
They are. And they're about, you know, currently they're seeking even more approvals for more gas all over the place. At the same time as Australia's talking about chairing an international conference on cleaning up the mess.
Well, who can be against gas?
Yeah, that's true, because you need, as I keep saying, in order to, they keep saying they're doing it to transition, and of course you can't transition unless you've got gas from which to transmission, so they, you know, they...
That's true, and when things transition from, I don't know, when I boil a cup of tea, the water is transitioning into gas, and then it's transitioning into air, and then it's just a necessary part of the process.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And like, I don't know, gas is like clouds and air and perfume and ghosts and you need that stuff.
Yeah, and people talking on air.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're gasbagging right now.
That's right, exactly.
Powered by Woodside.
And I'm sure there's people out there saying, I wish they'd stop. But anyway, now on that particular matter, Glencore, which, of course, is a big international coal company.
And not a TikTok trend.
No, its headquarters are in Switzerland. But it's in fact talking about now going on, because it's on the stock exchanges in a few places around the world, but it's talking about now getting onto the stock exchange in Australia so local investors can invest even more, have good more fun with coal. And they also say they have great faith that coal is going to really, you know, resurge, and is, you know, it's then they're not concerned about the fact that people might think coal should be phased out. But what worries me is that one of the people investing in them is the not one of the people, one of the groups investing in them are super companies, superannuation groups, which. Unfortunately, I think they shouldn't be, but they are. Australian Super, for instance, as investor in Glencore, and you know, these are the same people who say they won't invest in things that that are not good, like coal, for instance. But here they are investing in these things, and I can't quite work out why. But the why is, of course, they want to make money. But the fact
must
is
be good then, I suppose.
Yes, the
maybe you just had the wrong idea about this all the time.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, it's just interesting that there you are. But the fact that Glencore, and maybe it's what we're talking about, our government, which is on one hand saying it's interested in leading the world or chairing a conference on looking at pollution and looking at climate change at the same time.
Well, you need pollution if you're going to look at it.
Approving all this, that's right. Well, they're having a look at it, which is great, isn't it? Now, also, we mentioned last week that the state government here in Victoria was considering, although I think Carroll's now said he's not so enthusiastic about it, considering privatising Melbourne Water, which we feel would not be such a hell of a good idea. But
what's wrong with private water, Kevin?
Well, it takes it away from public water. That's the difference.
I don't want to be having a shower in the middle of the street.
No, that's okay. Well, you can have. Well, you can, but no, that's only if it's raining, of course. Unless you've got a portable something or other. But yeah, there you are. But anyway, we've got the South Australian government is talking about investing in a desalination plant, which of course Melbourne and Sydney now have already with government backing for private companies. But the South Australian government's talking about a $5 billion plant to supply the Olympic Dam copper operation. Now, they talk about BHP's Olympic Dam copper operation, but of course also Olympic Dam, one of the big metals they take out of there, always a metal, is uranium, of course, is part of the Olympic Dam process as well.
Uranium,
that's what it is. And but it also involves a 400-kilometre pipeline to connect it up and all that. But anyway, they're talking about doing that, and the Malinaskas government will seek advice from various commercial transactions to see if they can go ahead with it and do it, and it's all looking at it. But it's yet again just done to appease the mining industry by the look of it.
Well, it sounds like Mr. Pipes is going to be happy as well.
Mr. Pipes is always happy. Antimony, always happy. I'm having cotton cold here with tea and stuff. It's all very nice. It's all very good. Do you want to top up the tea at all?
Oh, I'm still going. Thank you.
Okay, rightio. What do you think of this particular Thai Kuan Yin tea?
Actually, it's very easy to drink, I'm finding.
That's right. You just put it to your mouth and sip it. Down it goes. The Herald Sun, though, of course, on the other hand, is attacking the government for the fact that it does try to claim that it's looking at climate change. They're attacking Bowen because he went to New York and spent money. Well, you've got to spend money if you go to New York, I guess, to secure the COP31 on home soil. Well, in fact, we now know it's going to be held actually in Turkey, but he's going to chair it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they're complaining about the fact that all this taxpayer money, as they call it, went off on that, and isn't that terrible? And another mob called Engie, this is a French mob, which are operating here already, but they're talking at least about investing in renewable energy, but their concern is that for them to invest in renewable energy in wind farms, the prices have to go up. And you know, the argument is that renewables should send the prices down. So poor old Engie's got a bit of a problem on its hands. Should we invest at the moment and bet on prices going up? Or if they don't go up, we could be investing and not make enough money. So isn't it terrible? But even with renewables, they have a few problems with the bottom line, unfortunately.
Well, we do know that in this world that there's nothing worth doing unless it's worth doing for money.
No.
Why would you do anything for any other reason?
I mean, wind and sun and everything are all free, but not for us, not for we the consumers.
And water too, in South Australia, it turns out.
Well, water and all that, yeah. Water, of course. Water's a big problem with water at the moment, of course, is also the amount being used by data centres. And all over the place now,
that data was so wet?
All over the place now, there's massive opposition to them, particularly in the Western suburbs. Well, not particularly, but in America, there's become massive opposition from what the ratio has turned around from massive support to massive opposition as people see the impact on their communities, particularly there in America. The electricity bills are going up because of these places using so much of it. And, of course, their water supply is also suffering. And people are suddenly realising these things aren't perhaps the panacea that they all thought they were to all sorts of problems. But anyway,
I think I was reading just something this morning about a proposed data centre in Campbellfield, up from Broadmeadows. And they were saying that this thing is going to be built, there's no community engagement, and there's going to be something like 250-something barrels, millions, drops, teaspoons of fuel just going to be on site. Just a short way from people's houses. And there was no community consultation about this huge amount of fuel that's just going to be there, sitting there, very close to people's residential buildings.
Yeah, and that's another factor here, of course, that they're also putting them in working-class suburbs or what considered working-class suburbs. So the west of Melbourne...
It's Campbellfield, it's not Campbellwell.
Yeah, north and west are... That's right, north and west are copping at Footscray. There's one big one there at the moment people are really complaining about, and there's one plan for out... It's out in Plimpton or that part of the world. There's a huge one planned for out there. And... therefore a major problem for the local communities copying them, but of course they also become a problem in terms of their power use. The government keeps saying, well, they have to supply renewable energy for themselves, but that's easier said than done.
It's more a suggestion than an instruction at this point.
I would have thought so. And in America, of course, there's a mob who actually do invest in them, but they also realise there's problems. They say I think we're already seeing tension as we get even greater as the data centres get bigger. The newest wave, the AI training factories, which are the firmest trend scale developments, that's the company, are bigger, more power hungry, and going to places previously untouched by industrial development where development codes may not exist. And that's in America, and it's causing all sorts of problems, and it's definitely happening here too. But on the positive side again, and there are some positive sides, Woodside, who we mentioned earlier, offloaded that particular mob, and they're now seeking approval, of course, to go up and sup up Scott Reef in Northern Australia, having already got approval for their Rockhart at Barrett to be destroyed, although that's currently still before the courts on appeal. And let's hope the appeal succeeds. But because of what's happening at the moment in the Middle East, you'll be pleased to know that they're the biggest corporate beneficiary of the Iran war. Isn't that
Woodside?
Woodside. Isn't that great?
Our little homegrown little Aussie butler.
Reporting nearly a 30% revenue jump to $6 billion over the past 3 months. Isn't that delightful news?
That's lovely. Maybe we can all get a dollar from that.
It's good for all of us. I mean, you know that, don't you? You realise that?
Yeah, I love, more gas the better.
Yeah. You're looking better today thanks to that. I mean, I must admit, you're a fraction richer. Yes, that's right. You're able to buy me a wonderful coconut thing here.
That's right. Well, long-term listeners of this show will know that I have a small bauxite mine in my backyard.
That's right, and I can afford a tin of Thai Kuan Yin tea, you see. So there we are.
And I make sure to put 50 cents and bury it deep every day to reinvest.
That's right, in Woodside, in your shares. That's right. And also, though, there's been a massive... it's hard to believe where the massive developments are happening, but the world's largest defence companies have invested a record amount into military startups this year as they try to adapt to the rapidly evolving face of modern warfare. And the story goes on about billions here, there and everywhere on war. But it's interesting also that Donald Trump says that despite rumours that America is running out of ammunition, they're not. And to prove it's not, it was he said it's not on his Truth Thingo website, you see, so it must be true because he said the state has massive amounts of munitions and it was on Truth Social. And yet at the same time, the Pentagon is asking the military to rapidly escalate, that's a split infinitive in the story, but never mind, rapidly escalate the production and delivery of weapons, including munitions that are in extreme shortage due to the war with Iran. So, but Donna wouldn't be telling a lie, would he? I mean,
look, I'm not so upset that we're running out of bombs, but this isn't exactly the way that I wanted it to happen.
No, by killing people.
By using the bombs, yeah. I mean, it doesn't make me sad to hear that the US has less weaponry now, but not because it's being embedded in people.
Well, it's pretty dreadful, actually. In the first month of the Iran war, the US fired off more than 850 Tomahawk cruise missiles and more than 1,000 Patriot and Thaad interceptors, and used more than 1,300 of the Army's tactical ballistic missiles. And global inventory of Patriot missiles had fallen from 2,200 before the war to fewer than 827, those sort of figures. So, it's massive bombing of Iran, obviously. I mean, that's what you can see. But also now the US has appealed to its soldiers for ideas on how to proceed with its war in Iran. So the poor old Pentagon's running out of ideas on how to win the thing.
Oh, a suggestion box in every military barracks.
Yes, this was going to take a couple of weeks, wasn't it, originally? But anyway, that's the go. So
I guess centuries can be measured in weeks.
Yes, it's a tragedy, isn't it? Look, speaking of tragedies, we'll come back after this break and talk
about... Speaking of tragedies, we'll be coming
Carol.
Back.
That's right.
All right, I'm just going to put on a banger for us. Now is the Time of Emotion by Prince Rama. Get your dancing escalators, roller skates on.
Thank you.
And that was Now Is the Time of Emotion by Prince Rama.
Yeah, I felt pretty emotional about that. we have Lucas Kakagiannis on the line. Lucas is secretary of the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union. Lucas, I want to talk to you today about the fact that we've got a shopping, I call them shopping, the workers union, but that particular union we've got a premier whose alma mater industrially was from that union. But just beforehand, how is your union going at the moment?
Hi, Kevin. RAFU is going particularly well at the moment. We've come off bargaining in Hungry Jack's and launching into KFC and McDonald's at the moment. So there's a hell of a lot going on.
Right, and of course... I noticed that, for instance, at the moment, Coles are talking about offshoring 1,000 jobs. I know you're going to be sort of in office-type jobs, but 1,000 jobs to India, I mean, this is becoming quite a pattern with a number of big companies at the moment.
It is. I mean, those workers who are being offshored are head office workers. They're not retail workers who are covered by RAFU, but I think that... I think that it's certainly a pattern that is emerging, yeah.
I mean, yeah, India would be a long way to go to serve yourself these days, wouldn't it? I mean, one of those things. Or to get to work, for that matter. But a lot of them are doing it. The banks, for instance, the bank union claims that the exact number of jobs they're sacking in Australia are being replaced overseas. So, you know, the reason is not some sort of altruism. It's clearly that they're going for much cheaper labour.
That's right. I mean, I think that, you know, we've seen this pattern again and again, and it's the drive of employers to extract every last cent of profit that they can from the bodies and minds of working people. And if they can do it for cheaper offshore, then they will. And the only way that we're going to stop that is a fighting militant working class in Australia.
Yep, and on that, by the way, we've just seen a bit of a change of the top at the ACTU, and the woman coming in to become the new secretary, Melissa Donnelly, she's from the Public Service Union, but is from New South Wales, so you might know her. Do you know much about her or what her history is?
I can't say that I do. RAFU were not affiliated with the ACTU, the Australian Council of...
No.
Trade unions. We've seen over many years since RAFU started, the ACTU systematically deprioritise retail and fast food workers, really. At the start of COVID, the ACTU supported changes to the fast food industry award that casualised part-time work. There was absolutely no need to do that. It was an opportunistic attack on the Fast Food Industry Award backed by AI Group, who are the employer lobby group. But, of course, the SDA supported it, the ACTU supported it, and Tony Burke, the Workplace Relations Minister, supported it at the time. And we see the ACTU fold in behind SDA positions again and again in Australia, and so it's very disappointing. And we are hopeful that new leadership might see that change, but not too hopeful because we have to be realistic.
Yeah, and of course we've got the Coles, the Woolworths, and 7-Eleven, all these places. They're regularly sprung for underpaying workers and owing millions, as it turns out at times. That just seems to continue, unfortunately.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, the vast majority of the money that was underpaid to workers at Woolworths and Coles was underpaid via SDA agreements. And so at Coles recently, there was a class action lawsuit which recovered hundreds of millions for workers who didn't get the award minimum entitlements. But those workers that were covered were only the salaried managers who were not part of the SDA, were not covered by the SDA enterprise agreements. The SDA enterprise agreements, and I can tell you this because I was one of those workers at Woolworths a few years ago, we never saw a cent of the money that we earned less than the retail award minimum. When I worked at Woolworths, I was paid about $3,000 a year, less than the minimum wage, and that was because the SDA had an agreement with Woolworths that allowed them to pay less than the absolute minimum. And that is, as you alluded to earlier, the union background of your new premier in Victoria.
Yeah, and it's ongoing, all this underpayment, it seems. What I find fascinating is, because you think on the law of averages, obviously they always say that it was inadvertent and they misread the award somehow. Awards must be very difficult to read. But I find that on the law of averages, you'd think occasionally they might actually overpay somebody if they misread it, but they never seem to overpay.
No, it's wonderful how that works.
If you toss a coin 100 times, it's likely to come up 50-50, heads and tails, but in this case it's 100 underpayment.
That's right. And I mean, at the same time that this is happening at Coles and Woolworths, or, you know, or did historically happen, you know, their profits are just soaring. I think Woolworths in the 6 months to January 2026 posted $850 million in profits and Coles $500 million. So they are doing very well. And obviously, as the economy takes a hit, more and more people eat out less. So the hospitality sector takes a hit. And but instead, they shop at Woolworths and Coles and cook for themselves. And so Woolworths and Coles reap the rewards.
And pay over the odds big time, by the way, for the food there. But never mind, that's another question. But getting back, therefore, to the SDA, that's the shop assistant, that's the shop in the York Workers Union, for those who don't realise. And they call themselves an association, not even a union. They, as I said, were the alma mater of Ben Carroll, our new state premier. Years and years ago, of course, they were part of the group of what were called the groupers, who kept Bob Menzies in government for years and years and years and were totally anti-Labor. And yet now they seem to be very, very strong in running the Labor Party both here and federally, actually. So a bit of a comment on that?
Well, I think it's very worrying for Victoria to have, as you put it, an SDA alma mater in the top job. If all you need to do is take the South Australian example. Malinauskas in South Australia was the state SDA secretary before he was the premier of South Australia, before he went into politics. If you remember a couple of months ago, there was a bill that the Labor Party allowed their members a conscience vote on in the South Australian Parliament on restricting access to abortion in the third trimester. Three Labor Party MPs voted to restrict access to abortion. One of those was Malinauskas. The other two were Koutsis Antonis, the Treasurer, and Michael Brown, who's the Minister. What all three of those men have in common is that they are all SDA. Malinauskas was the SDA State Secretary, Koutsis Antonis was a SDA Industrial Officer, and Michael Brown calls the SDA his union. And so what many people probably don't know, but those who are keyed into the union movement will know all too well, is that the SDA has for a long time run an anti-woman, anti-abortion agenda. You can read on the RAFWA website the SDA's published position opposing abortion law reform in Victoria. Some people in the union movement kid themselves into thinking that these positions were a thing of the past and that the SDA is some sort of reformed union, but, you know, the South Australian example shows otherwise.
That's what I should have mentioned, because I mentioned them sort of, to me it was my part of my generation, but the groupers, of course, were part of the Bob Santa Maria group of right-wing Catholics who opposed communism at the time, and it was on that basis that they kept the Labor Party out of office. And it, as I say, these are the people now who for a while split from the ALP back in the 50s, and then came back in the early 70s, I think. They came back into the ALP, and they now are a very heavy influence. Stephen Conroy, for instance, who's a very right-wing senator and a major lobbyist in Canberra on the behalf of several groups we mightn't necessarily support, is rubbing his hands with glee, because he seems to be the power behind Ben Carroll's rise.
Well, that's right. He was Ben Carroll's mentor, if you ask Ben Carroll. And so I think that's a concerning sign for what's to come in Victoria. This is certainly not a shift to the left. It's a shift to the right. And I think you can see that in Ben Carroll's, how he's, you know, taken the reins so early. You know, he's a the first thing he announced, of course, was the Royal Commission into the CFMEU in Victoria that the right-wing press has been campaigning for adamantly for some time now. He's just in the last few days pushed back the work from home law reforms that were proposed, and says that they are no longer a priority of his government. Of course, he was also the education minister responsible for the pay dispute with teachers in Victoria and solidarity to them in their struggle. But I think collectively, all of these signs are not that the leadership is going to be a particularly progressive one, or one that is very good for working people.
Now, it was interesting on that one with the work from home, where he said he supports the workers, and he said, but he also recognises and supports business. And I thought, well, he can't have it both ways, but he's obviously tied himself in a knot.
It's been his all of his messaging since he's come in has been that he's the man who can be trusted with business, and I think that I think that he probably thinks that this is strategic and way to a strategic way to position himself in opposition to Jacinta Allen, but no, it does not bode well.
Mm. Well, one of our leading businessmen came out and said on his first day that he'd be great. He's always been a great Labor person from the business point of view, and that business is now looking forward to working with him, which is a not too promising start, I would have thought.
No, I mean, Eric Abetz said that Jonah Bruin, the former head of the SCA, was the model of a trade union officialdom. And so I think that you can, with these sorts, the Ben Carrolls, the Jonah Bruins, these men of the Labor right, they actually get along fantastically well with heads of industry, and it's because their origin is a type of trade unionism that is not the working class militant trade unionism that you and I care for. It's a model of cooperation. It's a model of getting into bed with each other and making deals that keep you both in power. And unfortunately, those come at the expense of working people.
Yeah, well, and Joe De Bruin played a key role in the Federal Labor Movement for a long, long... Federal Labor Party, for not the movement, the Labor Party for a long, long time, and quite dangerously.
Absolutely. I mean, and he's still kicking around. I think it was last year he was invited to give the valedictory speech at ACU, the Australian Catholic University, which, there's all sorts of people go to ACU, but there still is a contingent of quite religious Catholic people who choose to go there for religious reasons. At the valedictory speech, he got up there and talked about his career in the SDA and in the union movement, and banged on for quite some time about how he was doing God's work by opposing the rights of women to have access to abortion, opposing the legalization of IVF, opposing same-sex marriage, and so on. And the crowd, the students and their families, spontaneously, no planning behind it whatsoever, stood up and walked out in droves. You can see video footage of this. When it happened at the time, it was a big controversy. There were media articles written about it, but something like 80% of the crowd walked out. And so I think that you can actually see quite clearly in that this type of politics, when it's actually spoken out loud, is widely unpopular with working class people, even with religious communities who, you know, one might think would be in favour of these sorts of views. And so it is really the mission of the SDA to keep this political agitating and organising that they do as secret as possible. They don't want it being out because they, quite frankly, know that it's unpopular. Kudos to every single student and parent who walked out on their valedictory, graduation speech.
Remember, it was quite a controversy at the time. You're right, yeah. And Joe's still going, and of course, Erica Betts. Erica Betts. Everything with Erica Betts is about the dear baby Jesus. So he also comes into that category, but at least he's liberal, I suppose. The problem we have in Victoria, of course, now is that coming up to an election, it's a choice between the Liberal Party and a fairly smart young woman who's dangerous, and Ben Carroll. So it's not much of a choice.
No. I'm glad I won't be. I'm based in Sydney, Kevin, so I'm thankfully won't have to cast my vote.
No, that's right. Well, excuse me. But also last week there were Four Corners had a program you may have seen about slave labour, both on developing chocolate in Africa, but also here with particularly fruit pickers and vegetable pickers. And yet the government claims there's no, Albanese continues to claim there's no slave labour in Australia. And yet, particularly with the fruit pickers and vegetable pickers, these are the sort of people who are supplying to the stores where your workers are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I do just want to note, I haven't seen the program, so I can't comment in too much detail, but I would say, you know, the conditions in the fruit picking industry in Australia are abominable. It's one of the great inspirations of the past decade in Australian union movement is the work that the Farms Division of the United Workers Union and formerly the NUW did to organise sections of that workforce. In many places that they organised, they were uncovering workers who were paid $10 an hour less, would receive a pay slip that was a napkin with, you know, a bit of just the number of hours that they worked, or in some cases the number of boxes that they filled for the day, and, you know, times by whatever their wage might be, $10 an hour, $15 an hour, you know, half of what the minimum rates are. They pursued a program of aggressive strategic litigation against these employers to win union rights to allow for them to get a foothold in these industries. They recruited workers who were migrant migrant farm workers to become union organisers and built some real momentum around that fight. I have the highest respect for that union and their efforts.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't. The tragedy, I think, of the Four Corners program was that we all knew it anyway. It told us nothing new, but for so long we've known that particularly, say, Iowaners bought in who are locked into one employer, which is, you know, problem number one. And then, of course, the labour hire companies charge them exorbitant fees for accommodation and travel, and they end up, when they're underpaid by the hour, that money is taken out of that as well. It's all stuff we didn't need to know, but the fact is that it seems that despite the fact we've known it for so long, there's no real action being taken to stop it.
Yeah, I think that, unfortunately, in these situations, you do need, there's only, when you're building a union from the ground up, of course, the United Workers Union is relatively new into the farming industry. It's historically been the AWU's patch. You need government to regulate. These are very, very vulnerable workers who don't have the same risk profile that Australian workers have to contend with, or Australian born workers, I should say, have to contend with when they organise. They can face deportation. And that can have enormous financial consequences for them and their families. And so it really is a case where the state does need to step in to regulate the sector. I remember speaking to organisers who worked on farms, and they told stories of nursing homes, like abandoned nursing homes, being rented by these labour hire companies. They would bring over a group of 100 fruit pickers from Southeast Asia, house them in the nursing home, sometimes 8 to a room, and charge them exorbitant amounts of money for the accommodation. They'd pay them that, $10 or $15 dollars an hour. These places were in absolute disrepair. They were crammed in there like sardines. And, these organisers would go there in the middle of the night, hold mass meetings, recruit everyone to the union. And then, the company would get word of it the next day and hold its own mass meeting and say that every single one of them would be deported unless they resigned from the union. So these are the kind of uphill, challenges facing organising in this sector. It is just lawless at times. Much more needs to be done.
And despite denials, we've got about a minute left, but despite denials, there's no doubt Coles and Woolworths would be aware of where their produce is coming from.
Absolutely, no doubt. If they're claiming to be ignorant, I imagine it is absolutely a feigned ignorance only.
Utter crap.
That's right. Okay.
Okay, look,
we've got to leave it there,
but thanks a lot, thanks, Lucas. Kevin. And I was just thinking we might all move to New South Wales and get away from Ben Carroll, but then you've got Chris Minns, so it's touch and go, isn't it?
It's a bit concerning. There are some good candidates in your ticket in Victoria. Socialists and the Greens, check them out.
Yeah, I've got a socialist in my electorate. It's handy to know. Okay, look, thanks, Lucas. We'll talk again, but thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Kevin.
Okay. Thanks heaps. Lucas Kakagiannis is the Secretary of the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union. I thought we'd talk about that with Ben Carroll. Next up is Anarchist World This Week, and next week we're going to be talking housing on City Limits. And Timony, thanks heaps for keeping us on air.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.